Morning, everyone. We will begin here. We don't have a quorum yet, but we'll start the meeting off, and as soon as we get a quorum, we'll accept the meeting from the minutes from the last meeting and stuff. We'll start out with Representative Samuelson, House File 3118, and let's see what we have to go, and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. What this bill does is just change the eligibility for seniors who are looking for property tax deferments, and all it actually does is change the eligibility from 65 to 62 for the spouse if there is a married couple that are applying for this program. Basically, that is it. It is, the program does designate 65 as the age to be eligible, and this is only in cases of married spouses, and the spouse can be 62. That's basically it. Are there questions? There are other qualifications for this program, and research does have a sheet going around.
Are there any questions from the members? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Simpson. Just a comment to represent Samuelson. I think your bill had the effect of teaching us all that this was a problem, and I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's a good bill, and we should pass it.
Thank you.
Would your testifier like to make any comments? Or?
Well, we'll ask him. Would you like to make a comment?
Please introduce yourself to the tape and give us your comments.
Okay, my name is Vladimir Leitis. I immigrated from former Soviet Union as a refugee the time Reagan met Gorbachev in Reykjavik in 1987. Those time, after 5 years being a refusnik, they finally allowed us Jews to immigrate to the United States. Well, I married an American woman, and we built our house in 1993, so 6 years after I came in this country. I married a woman, she had a child, I adopted him, she was a single mother. And it was our first house in 1993, and at those times, all her savings, she had some money, she was professional. And I started to work as a professional, so house we built was $200,000. Today it's evaluated at $411,000, and my tax every year goes 20% up, so total $600,000 up. So right now I need to pay $4,200. And all our income, in my 65, I was immediately laid off from the company I worked for, and all our income $20,000. Pay $4,000 for property tax, extremely hard. Additionally, because she is younger than me, and she is not available to Medicare, just her medical expenses is $1,000 deductible and $450 per month premium. I just want to show how big burden is this huge tax for our household. If all our income, $16,000 my social security, I'm professional engineer, and I had my license, and I had a reasonably good salary, so our house is paid. But right now, all our income is only $30,000, and $4,200 tax, it's a really huge burden for us. So, and I think there are some people like me where there is some difference in ages. At the time, a husband after 65, sometimes unwillingly, is out of work. And cannot support family as good as possible, and for women to, after 60, to find a good job and to make it really hard to, you understand, she works part-time only. So I really ask your help to change this law a little, and I think it's, I would say, typical, some difference in age between husband and wife.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions from the representatives? If not, was there anybody in the audience that would like to testify for or against 3118? If not, the chair will hold it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Fiscal note, if you do look at that, that isn't even basically kicking in until 2009. And so it would be really nice to send it to the floor.
Representative Samuelson, I would like to do that, but from the division, we aren't allowed to do that. This has to go back to the full tax committee. And at that point, if the chair chooses to do so, he certainly can do that. And we'll make that comment to him, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. No, I don't believe we did move it.
Thank you.
I will move House File 3118.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Mark Court moves House File 3118 for possible inclusion. And the chair will lay it over him. Okay, thank you. Next up is House File 2875, Representative Scalise. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bev Skelzy and this is my bill, number 2875. It's a bill to restore the market value homestead credits to the cities who have lost them because of the budget balancing that was done at the end of the 2005 session. And it's, the intent of the bill is to restore those cuts funded by the property tax relief account, which, as you know, in February was announced to the public as having a surplus. And so that's how this would be funded. And in your packet, you have a list of the cities who have those cuts. There's 100 or so cities. Some of you have cities on there, some of you don't. There's also a copy of the fiscal note, which is $16.7 million. Now, many of the cities in the state have lost a portion of or all of their LGA, and it's been a real problem for a lot of cities in the state. This is a bill, though, that market value homestead cuts were also, some of these cities have also lost all their LGA, and now, in addition, have lost the market value homestead credits. Local governments across Minnesota have had to raise property taxes to make up for this deficit. And in the case of cities, most of what they provide for their residents is public safety, that's police and fire protection. So they've had to raise their property taxes. And as testifiers, we have some city officials here, so they'll be able to tell you their stories. But for a background, and you people probably know this inside and out more than most people, but as a background, I've asked Steve Hines to give us a little update on, and for the benefit of the people in the audience, for an update on market value homestead credits and what they mean.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hines, if you would, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just I'll try to keep this fairly brief, but obviously answer questions if I haven't gone into enough depth on any of it. The market value credits were created in the 2001 tax reform, and the basic structure of the homestead, there's two market value credits. There's the homestead market value credit and an agricultural market value credit. The homestead credit for an individual homestead varies in value from obviously zero to $304. It's the maximum that could be. It has kind of an unusual structure in that it the maximum value of $304 is reached at a market value of $76,000. It's a function only of the market value of the home. No other characteristics enter into how much the credit is. So it hits $304 at $76,000 in market value, and then it decreases as the market value of the property goes up by basically $90 per $100,000 of value. It's so at that, using that the math, you get to a zero credit at $414,000 market value or above. The agricultural credit has a similar structure. It peaks at I think $345, although it doesn't go down to zero. It goes, every farm gets, that's at least $125,000 value, gets a credit of $230. Now, how the credit fits into the calculations is sometimes the trickiest aspect of understanding the market value credit. When the county auditor is determining each homestead's property tax statement, they first, as most of you are well aware, they take the assessor's market value or limited value and apply the class rates, which we're all familiar with, the 1%, 1.25% over 500,000, et cetera, for other classes of property, to get the property's net tax capacity. And then they multiply that net tax capacity by the tax rates applicable to the home, so the county tax rate, the city tax rate, the school tax rate, and add those pieces together to get the amount of the gross tax, really, that's due on that homestead property. At that point, then, after the gross tax is computed, the auditor computes the homestead market value credit, the $304 or $214 or whatever it ends up being, depending on the value, subtracts that so that the homestead's bottom line property tax amount is reduced from the amount, from the gross amount that the county, city, school sort of need to get to their budgeted levy amount. So by doing that, what that means is when the property tax payments are made by the homestead, and I'm sort of leaving out ag, but they're also part of this, obviously, the city doesn't get all of its money that it levied in the from property tax statements because this credit was subtracted when the auditor sent the statements out. So in order for the city to get, or the county, to get the full amount of its levy, it needs to get a reimbursement from the state to compensate for this subtraction that was made on the homestead statement. So it's really a relief payment to the homestead paid by the state. Now, in the 2000, and so now sort of setting the scene of how we got to this Representative Scalzi's bill, in 2003 budget session when we had the big cuts, there was the blanket cut that cities received was approximately aimed at being 9.3% of each city's levy plus aid. And that was to be taken, and there were some other caveats to where it wasn't always 9.3%, but that was the basic formula. For most cities, that was taken away from their local government aid payment. But for cities that didn't have much local government aid or no local government aid, that it was decided that the way to sort of pass that some of that cut to them was to cut the market value credit reimbursement payment. So for two years, for 2003 and 2004, the budget sort of solution of 2003 was to cut these reimbursement amounts by the amount that couldn't be taken from LGA because they weren't getting LGA or didn't get enough LGA. That was to be a two-year only cut, and then in 2005, they would just revert to the normal situation where they would get the full amount of their reimbursement back. Well, then, as 2005 session, the budget still wasn't doing too well, and it was decided that we would extend those cuts, the market value credit reimbursement cuts, for two more years, for 2005 and 2006. And I should sort of say also that LGA payments were the cuts to individual cities were not continued, but the overall appropriation for LGA. In 2005 was significantly less than it had been going into 2003. So the cities that get LGA did get this sort of permanent reduction in their LGA amounts there's no plan on the books for that to get back to its former level. That was kind of a permanent cut. So in 2003, 4, and now in 2005, the cities that are, this list of 103 cities that's in your folder have received a reduced amount of market value reimbursement, in some cases no market value reimbursement check, and also for 2006, and Representative Scalzi's would say give that reimbursement back to them for 2006. And I think I'll leave it there, subject to questions.
I would assume we have a question, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Heiss, can you tell me of your list of your 103 cities, how many are rural, how many are metro? And then I'm wondering if you can tell me the percent loss or the if we were to move forward with Representative Scalzi's bill, what percent would go into the metro and what percent would go into the rural areas? And maybe I have it and I'm just not...
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, I haven't compiled it that way. I can tell you that, just to make a gross observation, that it's primarily metro cities that are subject to these cuts. But your list will show you, you know, where they are. We could probably compute that off to the side here. But it's mostly metro.
Mr. Hines, if you can just later on, maybe, if it won't take you too much time to do that, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Lang, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hines, could you clarify in the... Mr. Hines, if you could clarify with the 2005, were any of the market value credit restored at all?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lane, no. They were the cut was extended. The same cut that was originally to be made in 2003 has been carried on now each of the 4 years. However, and maybe this is again, the amount of the cut is actually going down, which is a reflection of the fact that the reimbursement credit is going down each year because of this sort of unusual structure that the credit goes down as market value goes up. So take a city on the list that I'm sure is losing all their credit, like I'm pretty sure Edina loses all of its market value credit. Each year, the homes in Edina are worth more, so their total reimbursed market value credit is less, so there's less to take away from them. That phenomenon is going on. So I see it was $20 million in the first year, and in 2006, it's down to this $16.6 million. I don't know if that's the answer, but...
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might, and this was my position in the conference committee as well, that we ought to be proportionate here, that local government aid got additional $48 million, and it was only then fair for market value credit to receive some relief. And what you're saying, Mr. Hines, is in fact... How would you describe it? Has there been a proportionate benefit here?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, I don't think there's an argument that there was any restoration of that credit in 2005. Ms. Dalton is just saying that, yes, we did restore 30% of the LGA cut, but there was no corresponding restoration of market value credit cut.
Mr. Chairman, then, if we were to adopt this bill, is that a full restoration, then, of market value credit?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is, although it would just be the 1 year. It would just be for 2006, but yes, it's a full restoration for 2006.
Okay, well, my question or point would be, LGA wasn't restored 100%, obviously, I think Representative Scalzi raises a point of fairness here, but it's not equal to the restoration on LGA.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. First of all, I have a question, Mr. Chair. I guess Mr. Hines. If it's restoring for 06, the law only had it for cuts for 2 more years. That means that basically it would be restored permanently, isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, there's some Marquardt. With or without Representative Scalzi's bill for 2007, it will be fully restored. So this would be sort of, if you want to look at that way, bringing the restoration 1 year earlier.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, I really appreciate you bringing this bill forward because it does, first of all, provide direct and permanent property tax relief, and I think that is the direction we need to move to it. And I don't have one city on the list, but it is a fairness question, and I have seen in the last couple years I feel things that should be funded by incoming sales tax being pushed down the property tax level, and that has to stop. And I'm hoping that by restoring this, which is something that's new, that also is a part of a plan to restore local government aid and county aids and other aids that were cut gradually, because we need to get back to the balance that this bill is doing, where you're not forcing things back on property taxes, that we're keeping them on income and sales, or even the education. Moving some of those funds back to property taxes is not moving in the right direction. So I do appreciate this bill and applaud you for bringing this forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Mark Quirk, is that an indication that you'd like to move this bill?
Mr. Chair, I will move the bill if I can find the number.
2875.
All right, I move 2875.
Okay, thank you. Do you have anybody you'd like to testify for or against? No, excuse me.
Just
Representative Broad.
Before Mr. Hines leaves, if I could.
Please.
I think Representative Marquardt brings up a good comment in regards to this being direct property tax relief versus LGA. And I think one of the things that I think has come to my mind is that we often look at them together, LGA and market value credit, when they're really very different animals. Yet we put them on the same plane and we talk about them equivalently, and they're very different in terms of how they directly impact property taxes or they don't. But Mr. Hines, can you help me understand something that you said regarding market value credit goes down as property values go up? That makes a lot of sense. But would not the cities have the benefit of that tax base increase in an equivalent number?
Mr. Chairman, it's brought certainly as property values go up, that does increase the tax base of the city, and that would, yes, your statement is true. And, of course, the local government aid formula picks up the tax base of the city and would pick up added tax base in that case. So that is sort of the equalization. That is the equalization program that does take that into account. Yes.
Any other questions from members? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a response to Representative Broad on the local government aid. Local government aid does more than just property tax relief. It also maintains your current status of services with inflation and everything else. So not only is part of it used for property tax relief, but there's also a part of it that has to be used to maintain your current services in law enforcement and that. And so it is a distinction from the market value credit, but not the less in its importance, because it's maintaining services while also keeping property taxes down. Kind of a dual purpose.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Marquardt, I agree with you in terms of local government aid and its impact. The point I think I want to make is that they're two very different things, and yet we always combine them when we're looking at the issue of aid. And one is for property taxpayers, and one is for cities to help provide the services that their property taxpayers are demanding. And in a roundabout way, it does impact property taxes. So I appreciate your clarification. I just wanted to clarify that they are very different.
Well, thank you. Is there anybody who would like to testify for or against 2875?
Yes, the next person we have to testify is Mayor Bill Blazer of Little Canada.
Okay.
I think it'll be important to hear from some of the cities.
Okay.
They're very interested in this issue.
Welcome, Mr. Blazer, to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and excuse me, members of the committee. My name is Bill Blazer, and I am Mayor of Little Canada. Due to state budget deficits in 2003, Little Canada's market value homestead credit was cut by $102,019. That was along with the our entire local government aid of $96,686 was eliminated. So we lost $200,000 in that 1 year. And as you heard earlier, market value homestead credit cuts were to be restored in 2005. But after our local budgets were adopted, the state reversed its decision and continued the cuts. Even though Little Canada will receive less than 9% of its 2006 market value homestead credit, The state continues to require counties to show the full assistance provided by the credit on property tax statements. As a result, the state takes credit for assistance it is not providing. Unlike Representative Scalzi's comment earlier, where some cities did increase their levy to make this up, we absorbed our market value homestead credit cut by reducing our infrastructure replacement fund levy, which is our street replacement program. Continuing to absorb this cut will jeopardize our ability to do meaningful street reconstruction in the future. The state is no longer in a deficit situation. By continuing the market value homestead credit cuts, Little Canada's property tax dollars are being used to help balance the state's budget. And our taxpayers are not receiving equal treatment as compared to jurisdictions who are still receiving market value homestead credit, not to mention also what they're getting in local government aid. The state now has a surplus of over $300 million that is supposed to be allocated to property tax relief. And I guess in my opinion, what fairer way is there than to restore the cuts to market value homestead credit that have been incurred by Little Canada and the other 102 cities? Thank you for your time. Any questions?
Any questions of the mayor? Otherwise, thank you very much for your testimony. Oh, Representative Lynchinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, and thank you for coming. You mentioned for the committee that there's sort of a truth in advertising problem going on the statement.
That is correct.
I had a bill on that last year. I've tried to get that addressed in the legislature the last 2 years, and I'm not sure, honestly, that other legislators understand this, because I think people in the legislature are thinking what you raised is a funding issue, which you're here for that too. But the statement that implies to the individual taxpayer that they are in fact getting something that they're not, and that the city is getting something that it isn't, is the kind of thing that I think most legislators should find outrageous. And for some reason, it's very difficult to get people to understand this. It's like if the tax statement claimed a city got LGA that it didn't get, people would understand that. That's what's happening in market value credit. Your tax statement claims you're getting it, you're not getting it. And so we just have a plain old truth in advertising problem in the property tax statements. And I'm just wondering if you could take another minute and just clarify that a little bit more, because I feel like I'm beating my head against the wall trying to get other members, bipartisanly, it's not one side or the other, to understand what the problem is there.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. excuse me. If you're one of the 103 cities that have had a cut in market value homestead credit, there is a line, if I can find it here real quickly, in line within your county tax statement, which says, homestead and agricultural credits paid by the state of Minnesota to reduce your property tax, and then it lists an amount. And if you do the formula that Mr. Hines had gone through, you come up with the dollars that are stated there. In our case, I guess in my case, it shows that I am getting a credit of $180. Well, that's assuming that the state is paying the full credit. But the city of Little Canada is actually getting around, I think it's going to be $12,000 this year instead of the $102,000. So truth in taxation or truth in statement would be, instead of the $180 in credit that I'm getting, the truth would be that the state is only giving us maybe $10 or something in that line. So in essence, what the state is doing, or what the state is forcing the counties to do, is state on the tax statement that the state is giving you the full credit, which they are not. And if you're one of the 103 cities, it's easy to see on your tax statement. So,
thank you, Mayor, for your testimony, and I hope that clarifies that a little for everyone. Did you have anyone else to testify?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair and Committee.
Thank you.
And I also did, thank you, Mayor Blakeney, and I also did want to say that all but, you have your list of 103 cities, mm-hmm. all but 10 of those cities have lost local government aid, as well as the market value credit, and these losses will continue under the new LGA formula. Another testifier we have is Wendy Wolf, city council member from Lakeville.
Welcome to the committee.
And she told me that her first year as a city council member, she thoroughly studied city finance. So we're glad to have her there today.
Thank you to the committee. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Wolf. Please introduce yourself for the tape and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Wendy Wolf, and I'm a council member for the city of Lakeville. There's 853 cities in Minnesota. 103 cities, as you've heard, have had market value homestead credit cuts. But what you haven't heard is that 60% of the money comes from just 11 cities. And I've got a map with, which is going to be handed out to all of you, to show, I have one, thank you, to show those 11 cities and what sort of impact that it's had. I'll wait for a moment for you to get the map so you can see what I'm talking about. The map that's being handed out, I took from the Met Council report on affordable housing. It shows how much affordable housing cities have added since 1996. So the darker the color on the map, the more owner-occupied affordable housing a city has added. As you can see, those top 11 cities that account for the 60% monetary figure of the market value homestead credit cut have added significant amounts of affordable housing, Lakeville being one of the highest ones on the list. In 2003, all of these cities agreed to the cuts to market value homestead credit because the state was in a budget crisis. But the budget crisis has passed, and some of the funding has been restored to other entities. The education funding shift has been restored. Some of the LGA cuts have been restored. So it's time now to let us have our full tax levy by restoring the market value homestead credit cut. This cut was portrayed as a cut to the rich, but actually it hit hardest, as you can see, on the cities that have added affordable housing in the past decade, and these are cities that have added housing without state subsidy. The net effect for a taxpayer like me with a modest home is that you negated the credit to me. The amount that our city had to raise property taxes to get our full amount of needed money for necessary city services was equal to the amount that was on my property tax statement as a market value homestead credit cut. Because I live in Lakeville in a modest home, I did not get my market value homestead credit cut. For somebody who is in a high value home, they were effectively punished for living in a city that has affordable housing. We certified a levy that was 105% of what we are actually going to get because of this cut to our city. The first 2 years we absorbed it through cuts to city services, but we couldn't continue to do that and function as a city. So we levied back the money, but what we certified as our levy was 105% of what we actually get. So the people in the higher value homes paid a 5% tax penalty for living in a city that has affordable housing. The way that this credit cut was structured is if you continue to get LGA, you had no cut. If you have very little affordable housing, like North Oaks, you got cut $797. But if you live in a city that no longer gets any LGA, but you have a significant amount of affordable housing in your community, you got a very severe cut, and that's those people that you see on the map outlined in black. Lakeville has had very significant cuts in other programs. In 2001, we were getting state aid equal to half of our property tax levy. In 2006, we're getting negative 5% of our property tax levy because of this cut. That is a very significant hole that we have had to fill through local property taxes. We also lost LGA, but no matter how much money you put back into the LGA program, our taxpayers will never see any tax relief because we've been permanently written out of the formula. When they talk about full funding of LGA, it's full funding for the cities that continue to get LGA. Some of us will never get it again, no matter how much money is in the program. Lakeville did not get a significant benefit from the transit tax shift that occurred in 2002 because we are in the transit taxing district. In fact, we've been on the short end of the stick on every single property tax change that the state has made since 2001. So when you talk about fairness and equity in restoring funding, the fair thing to do would be to let us keep our property tax levy. This is not a city aid program, it's a state property tax credit, as you've already heard. To have the credit appear on the property tax statement and not pay it is propagating a lie in taxation. The budget crisis has passed, and now it's time to restore the truth in taxation by fully restoring the market value homestead credit. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Representative Scalzi.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there were any questions for Wendy Wolf, the council member from Lakeville. Otherwise, we could proceed to our next testifier.
Any questions from members? Seeing none.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Jan Collison, the mayor of Minnetonka.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Could you state your name for the
tape? Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. My name is Jan Collison. I am the mayor of Minnetonka. I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to speak to you this morning. I want to start by seconding the comments of the previous speakers, and then I'm going to tell you some things that I think you already know. Three points that I hope you will keep in mind as you consider this bill. The first reason I think you should support it is fairness. And you've heard people speak about the fact that we all agreed, some of us less willingly than others, to share the state's pain in the budget shortfall. But economic circumstances have changed, and not everyone is sharing that pain any longer. Schools have been totally reimbursed, as you heard. 32% of local government aid reductions have already been restored. And only cities, and these 103 cities, have not been made whole yet. So we're asking for fair treatment for these communities, both the MLC cities, the Municipal Legislative Commission cities, and the other cities in the state of Minnesota that have been affected. The second point I'd like to make is the significant impact of these cuts or these reductions. In Minnetonka, over the years that reimbursement has been withheld, we have increased our tax levy on property taxpayers by $2.7 million in order to pay for the state's program. Annually, the reduction in our revenues has been between almost $800,000 and $600,000 a year. This is 4 to 5% of our operating budget and 10 to 15% of our capital budget levy, most of which is dedicated to street repair and restoration. And other MLCs have experienced a similar or greater impact. You have a letter from the Municipal Legislative Commission that sets out the impact of the 13 cities that make up that group. And collectively, those 13 cities have carried more than 50% of the impact of these cuts. The final point I want to make is that although we speak in terms of cities, the impact of this program is to taxpayers. They are the ones who have carried the burden of the cuts, and they are the ones who will benefit from the cuts. So as you were speaking about this legislation, you were really looking at property tax relief, as the point has already been made. And in summary, I urge you to support this legislation that removes an unfair and significant tax burden from local property taxpayers. Thank you.
Mayor, I have a question. You stated that, what percentage of states that you believe the LGA had been restored of the cuts?
I understand that 32% of local government aid reductions have been restored.
Ms. Dalton is kind of nodding, give or take.
Am I close?
Okay. Close. So, and what percent of, what percent does this restore, Representative Scalzi? It's 100%?
For cities that do not receive local government aid.
For cities that do not. Okay, thank you. Any questions for the mayor? Representative Winchesky.
Thank you, Chairman Vandiver. Not really a question, just a comment. And what you may not know is when we talk about market value credit and LJ and this group of folks on the tax committee and the property tax division, is people just immediately kind of their antennas go up, and it always depends. Fairness depends on where you sit. And I think Representative Lanning raised a good issue. We are trying to look for a proportionate sort of as we restore funding levels, and I think the problem here is, you know, how are you defining that? And so I think there's for just for the benefit of the committee members, you know, we would all have different viewpoints on what's really been restored and what isn't. And so I think Representative Lanning is right to think about this as in how you phase something in, you know, what percentage, when. But it's been asserted a couple times that the schools are, have been held, made whole, and I just have to speak for the schools because they're not here, and I think they would disagree with that. And the reason I want to say that is that we are restoring the shifts we use as a gimmick to fund the state situation, but we also shifted a huge property tax burden on them on top of those shifts, which we have not given that relief. And so they would be here telling us that in addition to restoring LGA, which I think we should do, in addition to Representative Scalzi's bill, which I think we should do, and market value ag credits, which I think we should do, and Representative Marquardt, I think there's a bill on that tomorrow. We also should be buying back these school levies. And all of these things are taking place within the property tax system that's got all Minnesotans wondering why their property taxes are going up. And I think that's really the big question for the House Tax Committee and the Minnesota Legislature this year. Will there be property tax relief? And all of these things have to come together in some sort of compromise to pass something. I think many of us, at least speaking for maybe my side of the aisle, were discouraged to see the governor did not provide property tax relief in his proposal. We're understanding the Senate is going to introduce theirs this week. I haven't seen it yet, but who knows what they'll do. Market value credit, market value ag, LGA, schools, I don't know. And hopefully the House will be coming forward with a proposal. So the needs are great, and I think most of us are very empathetic on all sides, whether we're in market value credit cities or LGA cities, and I think we all realize we need to provide more funding. So I can't begin to guess what portion of any of these programs, and we also have the circuit breaker and renter's credit, which we would want to look at that too for direct relief, what might come out of the Minnesota legislature. But I'm glad people are here reminding us that it's really important now that the budget is turning around, that we need to pay back the cuts that we did do to cities, whether it was through LGA or market value credit.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the complexity of trying to make these decisions. I also can speak for our taxpayers in the Truth and Taxation hearing how confusing it is for them as they come before us and we try and explain the tax bill, and then we have to say, and this is partly because of a state program that we're now paying for.
Right.
And that on top of the bill that you pointed out in terms of how it's portrayed, it's very difficult for our taxpayers, and it goes against principles of transparency and accountability that I think also are important to all of us as local government officials or state representatives.
Well, and I think property tax relief itself is what constitutes relief is often debated here, because I know for just going back to the state attempt to take over K-12 and watching how quickly property taxes rebounded after that reduction, brings up a point. Would this actually result in property tax savings for the people in Minnetonka?
Well, I can tell you that one of the issues we face in Minnetonka, one of the needs we have, is our local roads. And that's a situation also where state aid has not kept pace, so we've funded more and more of that from the property tax levy. We need to increase our levy next year by $200,000. $600,000 of our levy is now going to the state. It's not being reimbursed by the state for this program. So I sit at a Truth and Taxation hearing, and I hear people, and I understand the impact of property tax. If I can find a way to not increase their taxes, I'm not going to increase their taxes. And while you look at cities, please keep in mind it's property taxpayers who are paying this.
I kind of mayor. Representative Nelson. Mayor, a series of questions. With this map you put out, you put number of affordable units that you added
and
in.
That was,
oh, that's like,
Mr. Nelson,
okay.
That's not my map.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, for your city, could you tell me what your commercial industrial, what percentage of your tax base is commercial industrial?
I can't tell you the exact percentage. I can provide that to you later. It's less than 50%. We're largely a residential city. It's probably in the area about of a third, I think. So our property taxpayers, our homeowners, are the ones that carry a proportionately heavy burden of our property.
Well, you said that you think your commercial and industrial tax base is between a third and a half?
It's less than a half. It's about a third, I believe. I don't have the exact number, but I can...
The state average is 15.2, so I don't think you're doing too bad on that. That in itself is quite a bit of tax relief for those homeowners. And I don't think that, as the saying goes, business doesn't vote.
Commercial tax property or commercial properties have not increased in value, so the burden has shifted onto the property homeowner along with legislative changes. In Minnesota,
commercial tax, Mr. Chairman, and commercial.
Your commercial
values have not gone up.
Correct.
Gone up slower than
equal.
Property owners' values have increased higher than commercial in Minnetonka until the last year or so, and that's begun to turn around.
I can, Mr. Chairman, and I understand that they don't go up the same percentage, but that they haven't gone up, that blows me away. But thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Representative Lynn Chesky.
Thank you, Chairman Vandiver. And Representative Nelson, I'm sure that was a shocking statement. I just watched your face. The complexity of the legislature, in my estimation, is, you know, you would love to have 15% or 30, and the fact that maybe one city has 50%.
I'd love to have 6.
Yes, I understand.
Literally.
And I think you have a legitimate argument to raise there. I want to just back up a little bit, though, what the mayor said, in that currently it is the case that commercial industrial is not going up as fast as housing in the metropolitan area. We've actually seen a flattening in the market. It is anticipated, however, to turn around, and housing is diminishing. So we may see just the converse in 5 or 10 years. However, there is one other kind of factor that's going along with these communities that we're looking at, and that is fiscal disparities, where if you have commercial industrial, you pay 40% of your tax base to someone else. So you have to keep that into account, that if your CI tax base is very high, you're not getting it all anyhow. I mean, it's going somewhere else, and we could debate that, but you know that's a different issue.
It's just not going far enough for
you want to say why. I guess, you know, but the one thing I would say on that it is, you're absolutely correct that these are property wealthy cities, you know, have more property wealth than the cities that are just in PA. And that was why they were asked to kind of share in the pain, and they shared in the pain at a smaller level because they don't receive aids. So I understand the concern there. I just think it's easy for all of us to go against each other here, but we should just restore all of this stuff and move on. We do have $317 million in the property tax relief account, and we could do it. So, I mean, I'm just hoping this year that we can, you know, relatively $16 million, you know, maybe it wouldn't, you know, we couldn't do 100%, but we could do something. That's a small number, but we would need to do a bigger number into LGA, too. And so I think we're kind of all in it together now, if we're going to be honest and start restoring cuts to all these governments, then we got to restore them to everybody. And maybe it's over time, but we have to do it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, following up with Representative Manchesky here, and then I'll drop it. But fiscal disparities is spreading the wealth. LGA was set up to spread the wealth. The fact of the matter is, with Chisago County having two eyelashes below 5% for commercial and industrial tax base countywide, and we have a couple areas that have over 20, so you know we've got other areas that are really down. Okay. That being said, Chisago County still is one of the 11 counties in the state that are net tax contributors. And so you can see that puts us in not a real enviable spot, because you know where else we're contributing our taxes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Brad.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I was just a little interested in what Representative Manchesky said about restoring LGA with the one-time tax relief account money. It seems to me that would be ongoing, and maybe I'm not understanding what you're proposing. So we're going to use one-time money for an ongoing program. I can understand maybe for this program using those dollars, because this would be a one-time funding increase or change of the repeal, but how do you propose using the one-time dollars for LGA reductions, or do you have other revenue options in mind?
Well, thank you for that. To represent Broad, we do have $88 million in permanent funding, so you could give $40 million to LGA permanently. I mean, it's unfortunate, I think, that permanent funding we're looking at in the House isn't higher, but there is $88 million. You could certainly do a lot of good work in LGA in the ongoing, and you could even take the $317 for the first year, fund it for 1 year, and dedicate the permanent 88 ongoing. So there is a way to do it, and I guess Chairman Krenke told us we're going to look at the omnibus tax bill maybe the week after the break. So, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Well, maybe we'll have an opportunity to vote on the Senate's omnibus tax bill again, like we did last year when it went down so dramatically hard in terms of the votes on the House. But I'll be anxious for those debates. But I think $60 million or something of that 88 is we're looking at Senate spending to make sure that we're funding keeping the sex offenders behind bars, and I think that rises to a pretty significant priority too.
It is a question of priorities, isn't it? Any other questions for the mayor? Thank you. Anyone? Do you have other testifiers, Representative?
Yes, I do. I have Bob Duras, the city administrator from St. Michael.
Mr. Duras, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the tape. Paige will help you out with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob Duras. I'm the city administrator for St. Michael. Most of the points that I wanted to hit this morning have already been pretty well gone over. I just want to hit a few things. First of all, I have a typo. I thought we were a group of 108 cities. I found out this morning we're a group of 103. I'm staying corrected. And what I wanted to sort of hit at is my sense of this as bad policy. And because the mechanics of it in the first three paragraphs that I point out in my testimony summary this morning, which you have a copy, I won't go through. But again, I wanted to underscore that because I think this is the kind of thing that the state, and I'm glad to hear representatives say they're concerned about that. The state is taking credit for tax credits that do not exist. I think that's been already stated.
It's very difficult. Continue.
It's difficult to budget from our standpoint. I think that also was pointed out. It is very difficult to understand and communicate. It was 2 years, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, 2 years before I understood it. I thought it was tax delinquencies why we weren't getting our full levy. And also that when I communicated initially to the county auditor, they didn't understand it. So by and large, it's a difficult thing to understand. And I'm sort of a victim of my own experience. I thought a cut was a cut. And I'm very familiar with state cuts. It's difficult to explain to decision makers and particularly residents. Again, and I think this is where I think we're going down a slippery slope here. It leads to mistrust, especially from city to state. And in my experience, and it's 30 years, going on 30 years, that didn't used to be the case. I used to be able to look to the state as a partner in this. And I think we need to get back to that. The real irony, and again this was sort of brought out, is it's part of a tax setting and communication process known as truth in taxation. And finally, in essence, the state is mandating that the county auditor be untruthful about the amount of state tax credits to homeowners on tax statements. Again, I think that is particularly bad and should be changed. I don't think we should ever try to put this kind of misinformation out to the public or to cities. I hope you agree the current legislation is bad policy, and I encourage you to eliminate it by approving Representative Scalzi's market value homestead credit cut restoration bill. Thank you for this opportunity. I welcome any questions.
I do have a question, I think, for staff. This is scheduled to expire anyway next year, is that correct? The market value credit. Steve?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for 2007, the market value credit cut would be fully paid under current law.
And maybe you could tell us, is that included in the budget forecasts going out in the out years?
Yes.
Yes, so it appears that we would have the money to do that. Which maybe could let us use one-time money. Okay, any other questions for the testifier?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to the city administrator from St. Michael, and I think there's one point that we should make also very clear that the cuts that will be restored in 2007 were supposed to be restored in 2005, I believe. So it's continued just to balance the budget mainly. So that's an important point. We do have Gary Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities. We hate to take up all your time, but he's here. If you have any questions for him, or maybe he has someone.
Sure, if you can, Mr. Carlson can add something.
And then that's the last testifier that I'm aware of.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Gary Carlson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'd just like to weigh in support of the Scalzi bill. We do support the restoration of the cuts that were enacted in 03, including LGA and the market value homestead credit. If I could just add one additional comment. We do appreciate the fact that the legislature restored about a third of the LGA cut. I think all four of the cities here today that testified had an LGA cut and a market value homestead credit cut. And if I'm not mistaken, none of them received any restoration dollars for the LGA restoration because the formula, although a third of the cuts were restored, several cities still received no LGA. So these cities all were cities that had no benefit from the $48 million that was put into the LGA formula because of the way that works. We do, as I said, appreciate that restoration, but these cities are in a little bit of a unique circumstance in that they had both cut and they had no restoration up to this point. Mr. Chair, with that, I will stand for any questions.
I think what some of our friends from outstate Minnesota forget is that many of us lost not only our LGA, but the market value credit, paid. Any questions for Mr. Carlson? Is there anyone else in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 2875? Who could be against such a fine piece of legislation? Seeing none, the chair will lay over House File 2875 for consideration for possible inclusion in the committee report. Thank you, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the committee for hearing this bill. I really appreciate it, and to all the testifiers who have taken time out of their busy working days to come and assist us with this seminar on market value homestead. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to skip now to House File 2652 of Representative Magnus is here. Okay. Before we move that bill, though, we've got the minutes from the March 29th meeting. Members have that in front of them. I'll move adoption of the minutes from the March 29th meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Minutes are adopted. All right. I have another minutes from the March 30th meeting. Members have that one. Okay. Representative Lesh moves adoption of the March 30th minutes. Any discussion of that? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Minutes are adopted. Is that it? Okay. And I'll move House File 2652 and be considered for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have an amendment, the H2652A1. I do have an oral technical change to that amendment, Mr. Chairman. It's line 1.3. It should be page 1.
Slow down, Mr. Chairman. There it is.
That's it.
I have to get caught up here. Does everyone have the A1 amendment? Could you repeat that, please, your oral amendment?
It's on line 1.3. It should read page 1 instead of page 2.
That's what mine said. listed. Okay. Representative Magnus moves an oil amendment. Representative Vanderveer moves that on the H2652A1 amendment, line 1-3, after delete after page delete 2 and insert 1. We'll incorporate that into the amendment and to the amendment then.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, basically what we're doing is specify in the amendment, it specifies that it would be the next general election that the city of Laverne would vote on the increase in the sales tax for the city.
So we're just getting the bill in the shape you'd like it?
Yeah, in the shape that I'd like to have.
Okay, any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad you showed up. I was fearful the last chairman was holding some grudges against me from last fall.
I heard it's somewhat justified, too, Representative Mays.
Well, I did fire him, Mr. Chairman, but I don't know how long he holds a grudge for that, but I'm glad you showed up. I do have a handout, a couple handouts, matter of fact, that talks about our bill. I have a presenter with me this morning, Mr. Ben Vandercoy, city attorney for the city of Laverne. Basically, what we're asking for, Mr. Chairman and members, is a 1.5% sales tax, local option sales tax for the city of Laverne to renovate the Palace Theater and in the town. And I would have Mr. Vandercoy talk a little bit about the theater, if he would.
Could you state your name for the tape, please?
Surely. My name is Ben Vandercoy, Jr. I'm a Laverne City Attorney, and I'm also the president of the nonprofit group that's helping with the restoration project. So I wear two hats today. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to come today to talk about this bill. I will be brief. The Palace here, I'm going to give you three dates for this structure. 1915, it was built as an opera house and vaudeville stage. So it's been around slightly more than 90 years. As the entertainment progressed through the years, it became a silent movie, theater, talkies, color films. Basically, it's run continuously since then. It's a large building, about 40,000 square feet, the largest building on Main Street in Laverne. The second date, 1978, we placed the building on the National Register of Historic Places. And at that time, it was transferred into the ownership of the nonprofit corporation that I currently chair. Then 2005, so on the 90th anniversary, it went into city ownership, and we're making a serious effort to fix it for the next 100 years. To do that, we've had architects and a number of the consultants tell us it's going to take about $5 million. For a city our size, 4,500, county seat, that's a huge obligation. It would basically eat up all of our general obligation bonding authority. So we can't really use that, and that's why we hit on the local option sales tax as an alternative. We hope to raise $3 million over a 30-year period. It'll pay for that amount of bonds. The rest will happen through local fundraising, and we have a number of commitments already in place for that. So the request is to let the community vote to see if they want to save this structure.
Thank you. Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, I have a little history with the city of Laverne. And I recall a number of years ago there was a Board of City Aid issue. And your mayor came up and convinced me that it was necessary to compete with South Dakota. And I was pleased to, after listening to the arguments, play in the bill, and I think it made its way through the process, $250,000 in Board of City Aid for Laverne. A few months later, I was very disappointed to find that $50,000 was paid Flaherty and Hood as the lobbyist for the city of Laverne on the Border City Aid issue, or 20% of the $250,000. And as you said, there are 4,500 people in the city of Laverne. And the city of Laverne, through its city council, decided to spend $50,000 in lobbying fees. So my question is, how much did the 4,500 people in Laverne have to pay Flaherty and Hood to be their lobbyists on the sales tax issue?
Chair, Representative, first of all, I was not city attorney when that happened. I had no input into that process. We have a new mayor, in fact. But I would say this. It's considerably less for this project, and we did hire them at a fee of no more than $15,000 to handle this project. And it's on a billable hour basis, so we suspect it may be less than that.
So, Mr. Chairman, I do want to thank Mr. Vanderkamp for, if I butchered your name, I do apologize.
Vanderkoy.
I'd like to thank you for your nonprofit work, sir, and it is very important. And I also know, being a city attorney in a small town, it is a boss leader for you, sir, and thank you very much for your public service. But I think that it would be a very good practice in the future for all these small towns, and not just Flaherty and Hood. I wish my mayor was in town from the city of Minnetonka, and we could talk about the Municipal Legislative Coalition and whatever they call themselves, and fees that generates. These are just property tax dollars, sir. And $15,000 is still $3 or $4 per capita, or a family of four, it's $20. In order to do it, and I would hope that the city attorneys and the city managers would take their fiduciary responsibilities as far as paying for lobbyists in St. Paul very seriously. Because I'll tell you something, it wasn't Flaherty and Hood that got that $250,000. It was the mayor of Laverne who convinced me that it was the right thing to do.
Is that a commercial? Okay, any other questions for the witness? Representative Brown.
Wange.
Uncover your name tag, would you?
I have days like that, too.
Answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Magnus. The second part of this that you're funding with this tax is for a facility for the Community Technical College. Have you
cut that out?
Have you taken that out?
The amendment takes it out.
Okay, well, the question I was going to ask is, was there going to be a bonding request for that? It seems to me that requests for institutions should go through the Minsky process.
That's why we took it out, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, man.
I think the Japanese are landing on Okinawa.
Everybody slap their mic with it, one of us. Let's see if it's not doing it. Any other questions for the witness?
I got a question.
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Vanderkoy and your nonprofit, Representative Magnus, as we've seen dozens of these local option sales taxes just in the few years that I've been here, and when I see the size of this and then the length of time, 30 years and then like $3 million, just back in the very late 1980s, probably about 1988, in the middle of the year it started, and in my little town, not 4,500, but my town that at the time was probably about 2,000, number of us formed a 501c3 corporation to build what we felt we needed, and we needed an arena. And we raised the money, and we broke ground, and we opened the facility in 1990, and it was worth $1.9 million. It has cash flowed, and today it's worth over $3 million. Not a nickel of tax dollars used for that $3 million in half the time. I just wish you well. If your taxpayers think that they want to be nickel and diming this to death, or if they want to change their philosophy on who pays for things that a certain group wants, but just kind of a comment. I'm just kind of getting rubbed raw with all these requests for local option sales tax. So.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Nelson, When we did change, and my amendment did change this, we estimated it would take about 15 years to do this. Because basically cutting it in half by my amendment when we excluded the hospital.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if they were willing to pay Representative Nelson anywhere near what it sounds like they're paying Flaherty and Hood, maybe I can go down and raise the funds for them. So,
Mr. Chairman, we already have a butcher shop down there. Yeah.
Okay. This is going well. Any other thing you lost control of?
I'm sure Glenn Simpson hasn't got out to make the party.
Anyone in the audience care to testify for or against House File 2652? Any further comments, Representative Magnus?
No, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank you and the committee for hearing our bill today and hope you consider it.
Thank you. With that, we will lay over House File 2652 for possible inclusion in the possible committee report. And Representative Howes is here. All right, sir. Oh, Pope.
Hoppy.
Please. And he's on the committee, so. Okay, Representative Winchesky, would you like to move House File 3410?
Uh-huh.
Representative Winchesky moves House File 3410 for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I have an amendment as well that I wasn't intending to have, but I do have one. So.
Do we have it?
No, I just have it ahead of me here.
Give that to the page. Yes, Representative Winchesky.
Thank you, Chairman Vander. I'd like to move the A061473 amendment.
Hey, Representative Winchesky moves the A061473 amendment. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment's adopted. Your bill.
Thank you, Chair Van Deveer and members of the committee. I'm Jean Poppy, and I represent District 27B, which includes the city of Austin. And we come before you today seeking legislative permission to impose a half-cent local option sales tax to fund flood mitigation projects. Certainly in the news this week, we've heard a lot about flooding. Actually, it's a very reminiscent of the experience we've had in Austin. And so we're coming before you seeking permission to be able to have a referendum to be able to address our concerns and needs in the city of Austin. With me today are Mayor Bonnie Reese and City Administrator Jim Hearn. And I actually am just going to turn it over to them so they can describe what we're actually seeking to do. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much for listening to our request today. Oh, and I'm Bonnie Reese, the mayor of Austin, Minnesota. So thank you. Austin has actually experienced six major floods in the last few years, starting in 1978. And as I'm looking out my window and watching Turtle Creek and watching Cedar River these last days, we start to get a strange feeling in the pit of our stomach because we've got the three sources of water coming into our community and a lot of rain. And we're watching the Red River, too, in Moorhead and Fargo and in that area, and our hearts go out to them. We've actually programmed in Austin for many years, and we've removed over 250 homes from the floodplain so that they aren't repetitively flooded. And we want to thank the state legislature. We've gotten state money to do that. We've gotten federal money and then also local money, and we appreciate your help on that. What we've done now is we have a comprehensive flood plan that we're working in our community. It's for 9 projects throughout the community, and the total of that bill is $28 million. Our sewage treatment plant is right along the Cedar River, and it came precariously close to being flooded in our flood of September 2004, and that would have meant closing down industry in Austin, one of which is the Hormel Company that employs 2,400 local people. And I think another interesting figure for that is that each day $3 million goes out to area hog producers in purchasing hogs that are then slaughtered at the Hormel facility in Austin. We also have another business called Austin Packaging that over the last 2 floods has received $4.3 million damage. And they have fixed it up. They want to expand, but they're right along the Cedar River, and they're part of our Main Street project now where we want to be putting in a berm to protect them so that they, in fact, can go ahead and expand their business. Austin Medical Center also came very close to shutting down. They see 6,000 patients per week, and they have a staff of 900 people. So you can see how much it affects our community when we have this flooding. So today we're coming before you with our request for the half-cent sales tax. And I'd also like to turn it over to our city administrator, who will give you some more information about Austin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Herm, I'm the city administrator in Austin. And we did hand out this material just a couple of minutes to you, and I'd like to just take a minute to explain to you what's in there. This packet, I think, was just handed out. You'll notice we have a few pictures of the commercial area here, and as the mayor said, we've done what we can. As a matter of fact, the city has been known as one of the top 25 communities in the whole nation in terms of non-structural efforts by the Federal Insurance Administration. So we've moved a lot of structures and so on. But with this last flood, The Chamber of Commerce and our business in our community and our community as a whole has said enough is enough. We need to address this. Spending $12.5 million in the last 28 years, we've done good things, but we've got to do a lot more. So that's why we put together this comprehensive plan. After the pictures, you have a 2-page summary of the 9 different elements. One element of it is a regional effort, and of course that's one of your criteria, one of the legislature's criteria. It is very much a regional effort, not just in terms of the regional jobs that are at stake here, but in terms of the flooding. It is a clearly a regional effort. You also have a chart which lists the nearly $28 million in projects. You can see that Austin, by the map, is sort of the bottom of the funnel. We've got two creeks and river coming through Austin. We also have a map here of the watershed area around Austin. Again, it points out where we are, the funnel. We are currently working with representatives of 4 different counties and trying to perhaps expand a watershed district or do major joint powers agreements to approach this in a regional effort. You have the council resolution in this packet, which is required by the legislature. It's a unanimous resolution. You have the letter of support from the Chamber of Commerce, from the Hormel Foods Corporation, from the Austin Medical Center, and on and on and on, Austin Packaging Company, and many of the major employers that are listed here. And the very last page is a list of other businesses who have indicated that that they are very, very supportive of this. So I find it somewhat unique that that the Chamber of Commerce would be pushing very hard for half-cent sales tax. But they recognize how important this is. We lost 2 lives in the last flood. It's clearly a public safety and a regional issue. It is very, very important to the city of Austin. They've done an excellent job in the past and will continue to do an excellent job, but we can't totally count on FEMA to give us millions and millions of dollars. We continue to appreciate what the state does in the bonding bill, and we appreciate your support if we can get some funds this year, but we know we have to have a local effort. The material indicates that in order to make up the difference as to what, you know, for what we need and what we can get through the sales tax, we'd have to raise that property tax at 24%, and we can't do that.
Mr. Herman, is this intended to actually prevent future damage?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And then What does Austin get for LGA? Just curious. Does anybody?
About $5 million.
Okay. A little bit more.
A little bit more than $5 million.
What's the population?
24,000.
Any questions? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And we appreciate your comments regarding the flooding that crested Moorhead last night, about 37.2, but up north in Pearl and Hendron, they're still having some problems. But so appreciate your comments. The pictures that are here, is that from the September 2004?
Yes.
Flood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, Mr. Chair, and whoever there. I see the proposal here, $27.4 million and about $12.5 million from the state, DNR bonding. Are there dollars in this year's bonding bill being requested? And what's the timetable for receiving this $12.5? And have you already received some money?
No, Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, we have in the bonding bill requests this year for $5.2 million. It's progressing through the DNR, and Austin is actually the number one project for flooding projects that is now in the House bill. So the reason that we're asking for the local sales tax is to help with that local match that we need for the monies that hopefully will be coming through the bonding bill.
Representative Marquardt.
Yes. So here reads this $5.2 million. Is this your first request for bonding dollars? So this would be the first five of the $12 million, or have you received?
Yes. Of this amount, we have received bonding money before for other projects for the removal of homes, but it's the first amount for this, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mayor, as you would expect, I'm 100% sympathetic to your situation, being right in the middle of probably the third worst flood in the history of our community. And so I think we as a state certainly have an obligation to do everything we can to help you in this situation. I'm wondering if you could help me a little bit with your numbers to kind of sort out different elements of it. If you could roughly kind of estimate what percent of this total $27.5 million is sort of fixing the property that was damaged, making that whole, what percentage roughly would be to protect property in the future from floodwaters, and then what percentage of all of this is to do things that aren't directly related to flood impacts, but are part of your plan to improve the community. I'd like to get some sense of that. Obviously, the state's involvement might vary, given the first two. I think we have a heavier obligation than we do on the third.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, I don't know exact percentages, but it's a very good question. The greatest emphasis that we're going with is on the businesses and helping them relocate and protection of the businesses. Because what we've done up to this point is, with the removal of 250 homes, it's been all residences. So when we're looking at these projects, we were looking more now at the businesses and what we can do. So that's the majority of it, is protection of businesses or moving them. If you look at the projects, the Wildwood Park, those are residences that would be removed from there. The North Main project is all protection of businesses. The Railroad Revitalization Project number 3 is moving businesses that have just flooded repeatedly, and that's a wonderful project because it's taking businesses out of the floodplain, putting them into an area that we fixed up the soil. It was contaminated. We've taken care of that, and it's an area of town that will be wonderful for revitalization. So that is business. Scattered sites, that's some business and some local or some residential. The East Side Lake is structural. I'm not exactly giving you a very clear answer, though, for your asking about what part is going to structures and removing businesses and helping businesses. Can you help me with that, Mr. Hearn? Would you say it's about 60% and then a 30 and a 30?
Yes, it's it's a little bit hard to be precise on it because the major project here, the structural protection for North Main, that's the about $11 million project, and that is for berms and structures and walls and so on for particularly the business area. But we do have nine other areas, including regional, where several of these, the engineering isn't totally completed yet, so we have some estimated numbers here. But it all is associated with protecting the community from flooding so that we don't have this problem anymore. That's all that this is.
Well, maybe to ask if the chairman asked the question a little differently, that I'm not sure how to exactly best characterize it, but I would assume there's some elements in here that just make sense long-term in your plan. They're kind of might-as-well things. As long as you're at this, you might as well do this. Things that maybe add value to the projects. I'm just trying to get a sense for what's really kind of local discretion as a part of this, as opposed to being directly related to the flooding impact.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, that's a hard question to answer because in our discussions, that was not a part of it. I mean, when we were doing these, we were focusing on the flooding. And with the Wildwood Park, when we take away that first street of the homes that flood, then we had sewer backups in three streets beyond that because of the flooding in our last flood of September 2004. So in taking out those homes, we're going to be making that improvement so that those homes will not get that sewer backup. So there are things like that that are included in this. But as far as going beyond the basics, working with our flooding, it's really not that, it has not gone beyond that. I mean, we have focused on what we can do to prevent flooding, to help businesses remove some homes. So if it goes beyond that, I'm not aware of it.
There's nothing in here beyond protection.
Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mayor, could you tell me, how do you determine when a house is ready to just plain remove as opposed to pick up where the flood's damaged? Is it a percentage of damage or is it a number of times of flood? I'm just kind of curious.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's a combination. There's a formula that we go through, and it's actually the formula through FEMA. FEMA has really done a wonderful job in Austin. They've been very good to work with and very helpful in this process. And it is both of those, in fact. The repetitive factor is major. If they've flooded several times. But it also involves the height of the water, the percentage of damage, if the wall has caved in, different things like that. And we have a list. We actually take a look at the criteria, and we have the list as which should be next and which should be next, and we follow that as the money comes in for home removal.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for educating me. I'm really just trying to get educated a little bit more. And then in regards to Hormel, since you've had 400-year floods in X number of years.
In 30-some years.
I assume you're trying to protect it from greater than a 100-year flood then. So how do you, what standard do you raise to a 500-year flood? What are you protecting Hormel from in terms of the standard?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's a very good question. And, our city engineer does not like to use the 500-year and the 100-year because they come much more often than, the 100-year flood is not really a 100-year flood. And so I have not heard him discussing, this will protect us from a 500-year flood. What we've done is we've had an agency come in and take a look and what would protect us above. Do you know the number of feet above the last flood, Mr. Herm?
Two.
2 feet. So 2 feet above the flood, which, and our worst flood was in September 2004. So we don't, and he may well have, but he doesn't like to say that because it doesn't really fit, the 100-year flood. I'm sure Mr. Lanning is aware of that, too, that it's protecting us 2 feet then above our worst flood of 2004.
Representative Pratt.
I have one more question. Thanks for allowing me. The floods that you've had, the four that you've had, you said this last one was your worst, and you're building it up for 2 feet above that. Have they been, has it been progressively higher, or is it jumping around? I'm just worried about, you know, it's not my job to worry, but I'm curious, I guess, about whether 2 feet is going to really protect Hormel and what the cost benefit is of all that. Maybe it's just that I should talk to you offline, and that would be just fine.
Mr. Chair and Ms. In answer to the first part of your question, it's jumped around. You know, it depends upon, because it's different things. I mean, we used to have floods that would be that spring runoff, which is what is happening in northwestern Minnesota now. But lately, it's been rain, and not necessarily rain in Austin. The last flood was 12 inches of rain in Blooming Prairie, and to the northeast and northwest, and those 254 acres funneling down into Austin. So if we only could have a direct access to finding out what kind of a flood and when it's going to be. So it's very difficult.
Crystal ball, then, Mayor. Crystal ball would be nice, wouldn't it? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Luchowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask Ms. Dalton, I think Representative Poppy's case, and I think Representative Poppy knows I'm not a local option fan, and we've all compromised over the years on these kinds of issues. But Ms. Dalton, we have some history of doing these local option sales taxes, don't we?
Mr. Chair, Representative Luchowski, we've done it twice in the city of Rochester.
I guess I have a couple questions. When you buy a house or a piece of property, or when they get flooded, are they insured?
Yes, they do. They're able to get flood insurance. We've worked with them, you know, with the national agency, and have done, you know, followed through as a city with the things that we need to do. And so the residences do. But that's one of the problems with APC, Austin Packaging, the company that has flooded twice now. They are not able to purchase flood insurance. And so that is one of their challenges, which makes it very difficult for them.
Okay. Now, the numbers I have, looks like you're going to get $7 million in LCA this year. And the sales tax is expected to raise how much?
It looks to be about $700,000 a year, and we've limited it to 20 years, so approximately $14 million, but, you know, it could be more or less than that, but that those are the numbers that we're putting down.
Okay. Honestly, you get $7 million with 24,000 people. It's kind of one of those formula things.
Mr. Chair, we're a regional center too, and so our services go out into the county, and so I think there's a different amount for the regional centers. Plus, we have a low tax base. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Anyone in the audience care to testify for or against the bill? Any parting comments, Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much appreciate the opportunity to come here today and be able to let you know what our concerns are, and we hope for success, and we appreciate your positive reaction to our request.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. With that, Chair White Chamber House file 3410 for possible inclusion in the committee report. And the I do know Representative Howe's name.
You
weren't here when I forgot Representative Wayne. So.
Steps hold, I'm not forgettable.
You've been told what?
I've been told, Mr. Chairman, that I'm not forgettable.
Oh.
That's not necessarily a compliment.
Well, neither is Representative Lanning unless he has papers covering his name. Voice is one to thank. Representative House, I'll move that House file 3749 be considered for possible inclusion in the committee report. Did you have any amendments?
No, Mr. Chairman.
That's unusual.
Save those for the floor.
To you, Bill.
Mr. Chairman, remembers the half-percent sales tax train continues to get larger. I'm looking to add one caboose to it, hopefully, that will be the end of the request. But this is for the city of Breezy Point, which is a great tourist attraction for many of you that come up to our area. Many resorts that love it when you come up there. Many resorts that also compete with other resorts that don't have a half percent sales tax. That being said, they wanted to finance sanitary sewer, storm sewer, street infrastructure, and public safety improvements. And also might make a note that they're also asking for an excise tax of up to $20 per motor vehicle. And I would stand for any questions.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative House, how big an area does this cover? I mean, it's a huge area, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simpson, it's not that large. Breezy Point, I should know, but I it's a population of about 1,200, 1,400. It's not, it doesn't encompass as big of an area as you think it does.
But the, but the system they want to put in is expanded out, am I not correct? And I mean, it's a big area that they want to cover for their resorts and that type of stuff.
Well, Mr. Chairman, yes, and there's also a school involved, and when they do infrastructure like this, unlike Baxter or Brainerd, they do have a lot longer distances to cover. So that does increase the cost. Not as many participants in the sewer and water, but longer distances. Thank you.
Representative House, does this have a referendum?
It is based on if they pass the referendum.
Yeah.
City Council has approved that it go there, so I would assume that would be this fall.
I mean, it's a... I was reading this wrong.
Okay, anybody else? Anyone in the audience care to testify for or against House File 3749? Seeing none, Chair, we have House File 3749 for possible inclusion in the committee report and the last.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, on the agenda is House File 3292, and I'll move that for possible inclusion in the omnibus. And members, what this does is read in the committee report, and what this bill does is simply reduce the maximum interest rate charged on delinquent property taxes. And sets the minimum. It reduces the minimum interest rate on delinquent property taxes to make them more in line with, it doesn't take away the penalties, it changed those, and anyone care to testify with regard to House File 3292? Questions from members? Okay, seeing none, we'll over House File 3292 for possible inclusion in the committee report. Tomorrow we do have a long agenda, and it looks like we will go past noon. So,
I've been 200 for the present.
Oh, we're voting out. Okay, so we are adjourned.